before I start off this show, I want to talk about this book that I found. And the only reason why I found this book, because they were talking about this man on a YouTube video, and they talked about him very briefly. I think it's the Most High Yahuwah and his Ruach bringing something to my attention, knowing it will catch my eye. And so I bought this book. The book was $129. $129. All to hear about a white Christian man's trip upriver in Africa. Why would it be $129? Have you ever heard a man named Richard Jobson in 1623? No, right? He's not being talked about in schools. He's not even really mentioned in any truth speaking or truth posts that you've seen in the last few years of this awakening. So why is this book $129? Well, just like the YouTube video, it explains how Richard Jobson came in contact with possible Israelites practicing Levitical laws. So I'm like, this is the reason why it's $129. And it goes back to that old saying, if you want to hide something from the Negro, you put it in a book. So I was going through, I'm not finished with it. It's like 200 to 300 pages, and most of it is the introduction. There's some pictures and a index in the back, or glossary in the back. So it's a little under maybe 250 pages. So as I was reading, they started going into the in-depth reason for their trip upriver to the Gambia River. The book is called Discovery of the River Gambia by Richard Jobson, 1623, edited by David P. Gamble and P.E.H. Hare. So if you so choose to get this book, it's like they typed it out, but on a typewriter that was like missing keys, or they just didn't know how to spell words. For some reason, they don't know how to spell words back then. If you read the 1619 King James Version, and you know that there's some words that are like purposely, it looks like, is it purposely missing some letters, or they added in letters, and you would think, oh, it must be because they're missing a couple of letters off a keyboard. No, it's like, instead of using bank as in riverbank, B-A-N-K, they do B-A-N-C-E-K-E, I think, or B-N-C-K-E, or something like that. It's weird. I mean, it's not hard to read or follow, but, you know, obviously those words do throw you off. So here's a paragraph out of page 126. They do worship the same as we do, the true and only God, to whom they pray, and on his name they call in their language, expressed by the word Eli or Ali, or Allah. Mind you, in North Africa, around the Gambia region, Islam was pretty high. Insomuch as if he see anything which begets in him admiration, casting his eyes to the heavens, he cries, Ali, Ali, neither have they amongst them any manner of image or picture or resemblance of any divine things. Again, this goes back to Deuteronomy, one of the first commandments, not having a graven image. But as far as we can perceive, such things are distasteful unto them. They do acknowledge Muhammad, and all are circumcised the manner of their circumcision. I prefer to speak of, in another place, their Sabbath, or the seventh day, is upon the Friday. Again, this goes back to the curse that Most High said, over time, our people will mess up the new moons, we would mess up the Shabbats, we will mess up the feast days, and we'll mess up the calendar. Just like brothers today are messing up the calendar. I've seen a couple of posts being circulated using the Dead Sea Scrolls as a way to formulate a calendar, but are not talking about the new moon days, nor the days of remembrance that are mentioned in the Book of Jubilees. And it's definitely not the calendar or the paying attention of the time through the Book of Enoch. They're relying on the Dead Sea Scrolls, which most of it was created by the Essenes, and the calendar that are following is the Essenian calendar. Basically, The modern day, not modern day, but basically the Pharisee and Sadducee calendar. So it was a couple of sects back then. It was the Pharisees, Sadducees, and the Essenes. Now, the Essenes are the ones that went into the calendar and tried to change it back around to a solar-only calendar, which reason why that the Shabbats are on Friday and Saturday, and some are starting to do their feast that were the 7th month feast days around September. And they have distinctions and proper names for 7 days in their week. They reckon their age or times by the rains. Again, this is how they change the calendar. They're doing the calendar by rainfall, and they're in northern Africa. And saying he hath lived so many rains, as we say, so many years. Howbeit, we do never hear them call upon the name of Muhammad, neither had they amongst them any churches. So they don't have churches, Christian churches, and they don't call on the name Muhammad. So was it a name passed down? It's like, oh, we're going to call God this name, or choose to call God this name. It says all the male children that proceed from the, they call him Mary Bukes. I don't even know what, how, why he made this name up, a Mary Buke. It means a religious person. From these religious people are taught to write and read, and in regard they have no paper amongst them, but what we or others bring them in the way of trade, and therefore is of esteem. They have for their books a small smooth board fit to hold in their hands, on with which the children's lessons are written with a kind of black ink they make, and the pen is in a manner of a pencil. The character they use being much like the Hebrews. Paleo Hebrew, because modern Hebrew didn't, I don't think, existed at that time, or what they call Yiddish or vowel counting. So I'm leaning towards they are writing in Paleo Hebrew. Next page. It follows I should not now deliver their poor opinion they should concerning us for and our profession, wherein with humble reverence I crave pardon that my hand hold should in the last sort be made an instrument to show or set down anything opposite unto my Lord and Savior. But by showing the weakness of natural man and the wisdom that remains in rotten flesh, the glory of God more perfectly appears to the confirming and comforting of every true and perfect established Christian. When we show unto them, we honor and serve God above, and likewise his Son, who was sent upon the earth and suffered death for us, who was called Jesus. By that name they do not know him, but by a name of Nale, Nale, they spake of a great prophet. And here, whereof, though they had heard, they had not yet made use, but no doubt when the fullness of time is come, they shall for amongst themselves prophesy remains that they shall be subdued and remain subject to a white people. And what know we but that determined time of God is at hand, and that it shall be his almighty pleasure to make our nation his instruments. So this is them knowing of the prophecy of they are going to be taken in slavery, sent to a land they know not, and to serve a white nation or subject to a white nation. And Richard Jobison is backing it up, is saying that, you know, they followed this prophecy. They may not even told him, you know, what, where they found it at, but they knew of it. Now, this, the version of the Bible is 619, 619, this is 623. Could they have had the earlier versions of the Bible? I don't know. But it does say that they have manuscripts on top of manuscripts, that they were interested in reading these manuscripts that were passed down from generation to generation. They set themselves apart from all the other African tribes they were around at that time. So it was clear that these people followed Levitical law. That's what he says in Richard Jobson's his diaries. Because that's basically what it is. It's a collection of diaries of his trip through this river. And he talked about one nation of an African king that all he wanted to do was get drunk. All he did was drink. And he talked about his 7 wives. But the number 7 comes up a couple of times when he mentions a specific tribe, where he has to have seven wives, no, none more, none less. That it's, even if he wants to get rid of one, it's still seven. So say like he knocks one down to a concubine, or he just don't. From what I've read or understand, it's always seven wives with the king. And it's the number seven mentioned somewhere else in there. I have to re-skim it to know what was said. But he linked this particular tribe to the Canaanites. And we know the Canaanites created the same kind of deity sounding name as Yahuwah. They had Yahweh. That is a Canaanite deity. So because the Canaanites were around Yasharel, they felt we can make our own God similar to the God of the Israelites and see if we can have the same power, do the same sacrifices, do the same offerings. And that's probably what they did out of ignorance. They's like, all right, we can't follow their God, and they don't want to marry with us or trade children with them. Like, so, okay, so let's create a God that sounds something like them. So all the other nations may fear us because they may think that we are calling on the same God, Yahuwah, with our God, Yahweh. That's what I'm just saying. That could have happened. And then it was rarely that they were obsessed with the genitalia of black men out of these African tribes. He went in depth and even saying that it was a curse. He thought it was a curse for a man to have a large genitalia. And this goes, it's fast forwards in today. I see so many posts on TikTok talking and calling white women mud sharks because they're dating black men. And what comes up in most of these posts I've seen when it's women outside of our race talking about, why do white men always mention or ask, why did the white woman that made the video, did she sleep with a black man, or did she ever date a black man? And when she says yes, white men turn their face up, get upset, roll their eyes, and they think it's a waste of time. And I don't know why. It's an obsession of, and it's always been, I fear, it's an obsession with some white men's proximity to, I don't know, the sexual prowess of black genitalia. I don't know why that's a thing. It's obviously, it's an obsession. When they came into Africa and they saw, it's just like the same thing with women. And if you heard about the story of Hottentot Venus, white men came into Southern Africa because she was a Hottentot, and the Hottentots were in South Africa. They saw her. She had very big breasts. She had a very big backside. And they had never seen a woman with bigger breasts and bigger backsides before. So what they did was kidnap her, make her into a sexual object, which is what they do today. I mean, truly nothing new under the sun. The same thing we see a Megan Thee Stallion, Cardi B, Ice Spice, with the same women that promote their bodies like that freely. Sarah Bartman or Hottentot Venus was the first, was the very first that ever had white eyes gazed upon her. And they thought, okay, let's make her an attraction. And that's what they did. They kidnapped her from her home, made her a sexual attraction, made her get dissected. I mean, they went through her body parts, they put her on display, they even whored her out, where she had multiple venereal diseases. And at the time when no one wanted to see her anymore, they chopped her body up, and her body remained in Europe for a large part of the century. Like, it was until, I think recently, I want to say maybe 10, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, and maybe even earlier than that, that they actually received the bones and the body parts from her being on display in Europe and bringing her back. And what they did, obviously, they put on display her butt and her boobs. But it's the exception, the obsession with, I guess, some white men's thing with black penis and black women's bodies. It does talk about how some of the Englishmen were trading for or love to have black women as bed warmers, or basically bed wenches, sex objects. And Richard Jobson wasn't separate from this. Being a Christian man, he was in love with the attractiveness, or the handsomeness, as he says, of Fulani women. So they all had their little cup of tea when they were all in Africa. And he said that he didn't engage in slavery. He didn't engage in picking up slave women just to sleep with them, regardless of how young or old they were. He just said he was attracted to Fulani women, and that's about as far as it went, as far as I've gotten into this book. So I see why it was $129. It's something they somewhat want to keep from you and just discourage you with that 129, that price. But it was just another witness that we were in Africa and we did know who we were, even if it was small traces of it. We do know who we were at that time, and we even known about the prophecy of the Deuteronomy 28:68 curse that we would be taken, sent to a foreign nation, and served or be subject to this nation until the time that the Most High comes back and redeems us. So he knew, or the person that he was talking to knew, that it was the Most High's pleasure and will why we ended up the way we ended up. Just like Yahusha, he wanted to let the Sadducees, the Pharisees, and the Yehudim know that it is not by their power that he is subject unto them to suffer to death, that it was truly the Most High's pleasure and will. This is why he said, "It's not my time." That's why he kept saying that. "It's not my time. It's not my time. Why have you called me? It's not my time." Like, oh, you want to go into the city knowing that the Yehudim is seeking to kill you? It's not my time. Even when he stood toe to toe, face to face with them, and he run away from them. He like, all right, da da da, and then walk off. And they would be pissed or upset. They picking up stones, he drawn on the ground. He not even showing no fear, because why? He knew when his time was coming. And he let them know, I don't even say being petty, but he would let them know slickly that you don't have this power over me until I tell you when you have this power over me. This is the reason why also the Most High trodden down Yerushalayim before most of the other nations trodden it down, so they wouldn't boast or brag that it was by their power that they did this. The Most High told the prophets before time, so the word would get out. Eventually, a nation whose tongue you know not, a people you do not know, who will not suffer the young nor the old, will come down there and destroy you. So when it happened, it wasn't no surprise. It was in these books to remind you that it's not by any of these nations that we are trodden down. It's not by white supremacy. It's not by any power of any man that walks upon this earth, that it's always been the pleasure and will of the Most High Yahuwah. This is why I have this I don't care philosophy, because I know what's controlled and I know what's not. And if you do not understand the power of Yahuwah, if you truly do not understand his will and his pleasure, and you don't follow the timeline and narratives of scripture, you are going to be lost of whatever happens in this world. It's very basic and plain and black and white to see what's really going on. It is, to me, it is. To most people, it's not, because they involve their emotions with what they see. I don't involve my emotions for what I see, because truly I don't care, because I know this is all predicted. This is all me watching a script. That's all it is. It's a script that I'm watching. Even us, we are living a script. Do we not follow the law, statutes, commandments? That is a script. So we know what will happen to us if we continue to follow this script. So all of our moves, all of our ways, all of the things that we want to do are pretty much scripted with the Most High. It's the same thing with evil. I know that people who join Freemasonry or Black Greek organizations, they have a script that they must follow. If that script involves leading people astray, then I know they have to stick to this script. They can't come out of it. If the script calls them to use symbolism and numerology, I follow it. I know they can't break from it. Regardless if they're caught, regardless if they are exposed, it don't matter. A sister told me that my Instagram was shut down. You know why it was shut down? Because I go off script sometimes. That I think that's the only thing that when I talk truth on social media, I don't stick to one thing. The reason why other pages flourish and they're not shadow banned, because they stick to one thing. There's a page that only talks about the rigging of sports. That's all he talks about. He don't talk about nothing else. Nothing else he talks about. It's always the rigging of sports. He starts almost every video, sports is scripted. Sports is scripted, sports is scripted, sports is scripted. That's all he does. He doesn't talk about nothing else. So that's why he has a large following on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. That's why he has a large following. He don't talk about nothing else. So they fine with that. They're fine with him talking about one thing. There's another guy that talks about the numerology in sports. That's all he talks about. He don't talk about nothing else. Absolutely nothing else. Here and there, he'll throw in something about Charlie Kirk or the numerology attached. But for the most part, he's talking about how sports are scripted too. That's all he will talk about. There is one page that only talks about Hollywood. Hollywood, 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 the symbolism of Hollywood. That's all they talk about. They don't talk about nothing else. My page, I'm hitting all angles, and whoever I can shoot at, I'm shooting at. I'm shooting on the low, I'm shooting on the high, I'm shooting in the branches, I'm shooting in a sequoia. I'm shooting. And my target changes all the time. So the reason why my page was shut down is because I posted about Boston Legal having an episode. I think it was season 5, episode 4. I don't remember. But it was called Hope and Gory, and it was about a mother whose daughter had been killed by her husband, and the husband got off for pleading temporary insanity. Now, the mother walked into a lawyer's office, played by the guy whose voice was Ultron. I forgot his name. But she tried to get him to tell her what would be the best way to plead a temporary insanity case if she killed the husband that murdered her daughter. And so he didn't want to take the case. She ended up killing the man anyway. Then they go in trial and said that she must plead, that she wanted to plead temporary insanity. She's not saying that she didn't do it. She's saying that she's pleading insanity because of the death of her daughter. I didn't see the rest of the episode, but that's what the episode was about. And I said this episode aired October 30th, 2007, which is on the 303 days left in the year, 33. And then right after that, right before that, I posted about this old lady that said that there was a precedent that was going to be set. If she gets away with this, then this means that women are weaponizing their hormones against themselves, that you won't get a job because people are in fear or your hormones going out of whack, and it may cause you to kill somebody. Right now, we already had a bunch of copycat Lindsay Clancy's. So she goes on to say, but she's reading this from a Facebook post, actually. She goes on to say that you won't be able to get a high stressful job because your hormones are out of whack. If you go to a job interview, they ask you, do you look to become pregnant or you are pregnant? We'll go another direction because obviously you can't control your hormones. They could play this card. Truly, they could, if they really wanted to usurp white women in the workplace that are in high positions and destroy the nucleus of the white family, this is one way they would go about it. I could see this happening. You hit two birds with one stone. Not only do you fire a white woman that has a really good salary and bringing that salary to her husband, not only that, you also now disrupt the you disrupt the money coming into the house, basically. And then if you disrupt that, then they can't pay for childcare. Can't pay for childcare. You got to bring her out of school. She has to quit. Now it's all on the husband. Now, if the husband has a wife that is validating Lindsay Clancy's approach, then the entire household is going to unravel. Then he's going to seek divorce, or she's going to seek divorce. He's worried for the children. Then you basically knocked out. You've knocked out a family for the next couple of generations, really. And that's what they're looking to do, as I said it before in the last episode. So, yeah. So that's why my page was shut down, because I posted those things closely together, and it must have got a lot of traction. And this was really right before they declared a mistrial. Now, you should have known they're going to declare a mistrial. They had this woman right before they declared the mistrial, that she was taking pictures of the jurors. Mind you, you haven't seen pictures of the jurors. You haven't seen videos of the jurors. All you've known and all you've seen is the judge, the prosecution, the defense, Lindsey Clancy, and the people or the peanut gallery witnessing from the press. That's all you've seen. There might not even be anybody in that courtroom that are jurors. This is all a show. If you don't understand this, this is all a show. A show. A show. A show. A show. And her name, the woman who stood up to try to take pictures of Lindsey Clancy, but she tried to take pictures of the jury too. Her name was Dawn Light. Dawn. As it's always darkest before dawn. Dawn Light, as in darkness to light. As what Freemasons say and believe in so many different ways, they go from darkness to light. About exposing from... Like I said, once I heard her name, I know it was BS after that. And then somebody found out from a podcast that I've seen on Twitter that in 2020, there was another woman who strangled her children, three, on the same date, January 24th, as Lindsey Clancy in 2023. Both being nurse practitioners, both the husbands were to blame, and the initials of the children remained the same. Even though the names changed, the initials of the children were the same. And they were the same, two boys, one girl, or two girls, one boy? That's what it was. It was the exact same children, the number and initials. The women both suffered from postpartum. And this was in Ireland. And then 2023, it ended up in America. So there, you're basically looking at actors. That's what you're looking at. That's why it was so easy for him to move on. Right after he lost those children, he jumped right into it. Maybe he was already married to that woman. Maybe they put them together, shot a couple of Facebook posts, and her being pregnant. Could have been a baby bump. Y'all don't know. Y'all weren't there to deliver these babies. So how do you know if it was hers or not? Just like we see Charlie Kirk or Erica Kirk's children, and they always have their faces turned. But you never see not one picture of Erica Kirk pregnant. Just like you never seen Michelle Obama pregnant. But we all fooled by that these are their children. We got fooled by 9/11, that two planes ran into a building. Then you come to find out it was never two planes. That it was very good CGI at the time. We haven't even heard of CGI. Then it was a Sandy Hook killing. And we find out those children never died. Uvalde, two parents, two fathers talking about they missing their daughter. Two fathers on two separate television broadcasts claiming the same daughter. Donald Trump's fake assassination where he get nipped in the ear. I'm telling you, they had nothing else better to do than to lead you to the Antichrist or the B system through trauma. This is like the very basis of MKUltra. You can control people through trauma. This is what they do know. So there's no reason for them to gather all these people up and to bring them to a CIA facility and put them all under mind control. There's no point of it. You just give them a TV and a phone in their hand and it'll do the work itself. Truly, it'll do the work itself. So this entire Lindsey Clancy thing is a spell. And it's a spell to go after impressionable white women with children in a good home. With a father that's making money. They want to disrupt that. So anyway, yeah. That's what it led me to believe about this system. So like I said, if everything is a script. And if you go off script, they don't want any attention going to the page or to the source. So that's why I don't talk about just sports. I don't talk about just politics. I don't talk about just Hollywood. I talk about any and everything. So I like to keep them off balance. Like Yahusha says, harmless as a dove, but wise as a serpent. I think people who stick to one thing, it ain't nothing wrong with knowing just one thing and you going from there. But obviously, when you are stick to the script and your followers are based on the script that you're showing, it's hard for you to gain new followers because you're talking about one thing. And after a while, people get tired of you repeating the same thing. Oh, sports are scripted. Okay, they are. Where do we go from here? Okay, Hollywood does symbolism. Okay, where do we go from here? Like people are stuck. Like, where do you go after that? It's only but so many Hollywood politics and rigged sports that you can dive into without people being like, all right, what's next? And after a while, people just argue with you. People just come to your page to argue because you're not reaching anybody new. So anyway, the meaning of this show, Dear Malia, is a sister that's 19 years old, and she emailed me about being new to this walk, but also having some really good questions that I just really couldn't answer her in an email, that I'd rather answer it on the show for anybody who else is new and is fairly young in this walk. Her question states, her first question, what do you know about the Apocrypha? I've come across a lot of discussion about whether these books are biblical or should be considered scripture, and I'd really like to hear your thoughts personally. I would like to read them, but I want to make sure I'm not filling my mind with something that is false or misleading. If you have a particular collection or version that you recommend, where do you get yours? I've always stood behind the Sefer. Now, I had King James. I had the 1619 or the 1611. I got the 1619, I think the 1611 King James versions with the restored names, but I still rely on the Sefer only because it's digital and I can sometimes I don't remember scriptures very well, but I can remember phrases or words, and I use the Sefer more often than I would, the physical, because I need to search. And sometimes searching the digital version of Sefer, I'm brought into something else that I need to talk about. So that's why I stand behind using the Sefer. Is it perfect? No, by in no ways is it perfect. The reason that I use certain books out of the Apocrypha is really I read it for myself. The same thing with Yah's scriptures. The same thing. The reason why I stopped reading Yah's scriptures, because I was reading a section in Abraham that describes Sarah as a white woman when they were talking about the beauty of Sarah. And they took this story from when she was kidnapped by the Egyptian king. So that didn't make sense to me. Why they would talk about her skin as if, and her eyes being blue and her skin being white as a cloud. So that's why I stopped reading that book. And some of y'all, I think, are too fearful and not being misled, but this is how you prove your Ruach. This is how you learn discernment. We're all going to read something that it sounds good to us, but the more we read it further, this our Ruach tells us, like, oh, you might want to stop here and check scriptures to see if this is something that you need to follow. You need to do that. We aren't always going to get the right thing. We're not always going to get the right thing because we're so thirsty for knowledge and understanding that we're trying to read everything and yet understanding absolutely none of it. Because we don't know the backing, we don't know the source. So if you read the books of the scripture, you will come across certain scriptures that will point you in direction of the Apocrypha. For instance, Joshua 10:13, it mentions, is not this written in the Sefer of Yasher, when it talks about the Most High causing the sun to stand still while Joshua was battling the Canaanites. Now, Joshua 10:13 has been in the scriptures for thousands of years, yet no one has ever mentioned where is this book of Yasher. That's how you connect it to, okay, if I get the Bible, the book Yasher, then I'll read Yasher all the way through and it will make sense. And it does. The only thing is that Yasher and Jubilees conflict, and they only conflict based on a few characters. Yasher and Jubilees conflict on Teron, Abraham's father. One version says he burned up in the fire. The other says he died, leaving Babylon. The other one was Esau. It says Jacob struck Esau with an arrow and he died. And then one of Jacob's children's children decapitated Esau. Decapitated Esau when they were fighting over where to bury Yaakov in the cave next to Yitzhak, his father, and Rivkah, his mother. And of course, Abraham's brother. They conflict. Once he said he died because he had an unbelieving heart for Yahuwah, And another one said, he died somewhere else. Does it do anything to change? Does it change how I worship or change the calendar I follow? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. It's just characters. But I know that they conflict based on me reading them. So I think that's important. That whatever is false and misleading, your ruach will tell you, will alarm you to, discern you for, knowing what is real, what is false, what's misleading, when you need to stop, when you need to take from this and take from that. That's the whole point of learning. I know this generation, like, it wants what I need to know, what I don't need to know, and let's go from there. You need to know all of it. You need to know what the enemy has done. You truly do. You need to know why they did it. Now, I know in some of these books that the enemy couldn't have gone into them because it exposes them too much. I know if they truly had power to release certain parts of these books, they wouldn't release books that would really point the fingers away from them, especially when it came to the nation and where the real biblical lands are. The more you read the scriptures, like I said before, you know the topography is completely different from of what we were told is the real Holy Land. So the other apocryphal books, which I also read before I got the Sefer, was the Pseudepigraphos, Volume 1, Volume 2. They're pretty much the same thing that's the Sefer. They got the Book of Enoch, they got Baruch, they got Ezra. Only thing they have added onto it was like the Odes of Solomon, the Prayer of Jacob, and the courtship between Joseph and Aseneth. That's pretty much it. Oh, the Apocryphus of the Life of Adam and Eve. I read those books. I mean, it really doesn't do anything for me. I can't tell if it's real or not. I mean, it's just written of what happened during their time in the Garden of Eden. Now, regardless of what I've read, it doesn't move me one way or the other to know it was false or misleading because it's not leading me anywhere. It's just knowledge and information. The same thing with the Book of Giants. Okay, I already knew that the Nephilim and the Rephaim were upon the earth. Now, if I want to learn a little bit more backstory, maybe, but I would need to know where these books came from. If they came from anywhere out of the Dead Sea Scrolls, I'm taking it with a grain of salt. Because again, it is relying on man's account. I'm a woman and celebrating Passover while on my monthly cycle was something I struggled with understanding. I wasn't able to give a burnt offering because I didn't want to defile the makeshift altar I had prepared. I also don't see much discussion about how unmarried women are supposed to handle these ordinances during their monthly cycle. Would I follow the ordinances as usual but refrain from the burnt offering during that time? Or is there another way you understand scripture to address this? I think this is an excellent, excellent question because this is not the first time I got asked this. Recently, another sister asked me the very same thing. And I haven't really thought about it much because obviously I'm not on a menstrual cycle. This is how I reason with it. And may y'all correct me if I'm wrong. The women were set apart when they had their menstrual cycle. So it was most likely that they would miss Pesach, or some parts of it, if they had their cycle. Now, single women, I'm pretty sure there were single women in the days of Yasharel who got their menstrual cycle during Passover or Pesach. And just like they can't touch any sanctified thing, it would be no point for you to give an offering or to touch your altar if you made one. What you can do to fix this issue is to not, if you have your menstrual cycle on Pesach, that you don't do any of it for the entire week, regardless if it falls in the middle of the feast day, the tail end or the front end, regardless, just say, okay, I'm not going to do Pesach for the first of the month. Then come back and do the Pesach for the second month, which is mentioned, it's mentioned in scripture in accordance to anybody who's touched a dead body. If you touched a dead body, you can't participate in Pesach. Not saying you women in your menstrual cycle, you are a dead body, but I'm saying if it's an issue of blood and cleanliness and purity, you should do the Pesach, the second Pesach, and do the Feast of Matzah on the second month, the 15th of the month. Where the 14th at evening, and then the 15th of the second month, doing the Feast of Matzah. So you don't get your period then. You can track this. You should know when your menstrual cycle is going to come. So if you see that you know your menstrual cycle is going to come on the first, the 14th of the first month, look and check and see if it doesn't come to you on the second month, based on the obviously the calendar that I've given you. And then you can decide for yourself, if you really want to redo Pesach, you have another option. Just like the Israelites at that time had another option if they touched a dead body during that time, that they wait and do later. I think I would say that was like that would be the best solution for you. I also wanted to ask about your conclusion that Israel was in Africa. I'm a biology major, so I have a decent understanding of things like wet and dry seasons and how they relate to geography and the land. However, I'm having a harder time understanding exactly where you believe Israel would have been located geographically. I'm African American, so the idea of being exiled to a foreign land where the people no longer speak our language makes sense to me in terms of displacement. I think I just need to be able to visually understand the geography and see the locations you studied to fully comprehend your position. Are there any maps, resources, or studies you would recommend? When I started getting into the real biblical lands, you know who got me there? It was Truth Unveiled 777. Truth Unveiled 777 on YouTube. That's who really got me into where the real locations are. And he did beautifully the information that he was putting out. Some of his clips were like an hour long, just straight off the maps that he found. And he found these maps off of David Rumsey's map collection. So I kind of grabbed the baton from him. And that's how I started finding other biblical locations using the David Rumsey's map collection. It's free, by the way. They just know you Negroes not going to find it. Or they hope you won't find it, but it's there. It's been there the whole entire time. These maps are like back in the 1500s, 1600s, and 1700s, and even 1800s. And they were placing Jerusalem or Jerusalem in southern Namibia, right next to Pella. Sometimes it don't even be Jerusalem there, it be Pella. And Pella was one of the cities, one of the Grecian cities, that people ran to or fled to during the time of Roman persecution in 70 AD. If you Google online, what was the city Pella? All they'll say that it was from Christians and Jews ran from the destruction of the Romans. And there was no Christians there at all. It was maybe Yehudim there, but it was Israelites and they were in Africa. So even if you type in Pella, you'll see Pella pop up so many times in southern Namibia. So I would start off with Truth Unveiled. And so you can get a longer and visual breakdown of where these locations are. He talks about Babylon. He talks about Persia. He talks about the Akkadian and Assyrian Empire. So once you know where those empires are, you can kind of see how we went and walked from different nations being in their captivity. Now, his voice is going to throw you off. It's going to sound like it's a woman, but he was or is a gay man. Now, he doesn't even put out videos anymore. And I think this was like in the last 2 or 3 years, he hasn't done anything, absolutely nothing. And I think he got called out because he tried to make a stance that he would be allowed to go to heaven being a gay man, even though he does not involve himself with gay activity. So he tried to relate himself to the eunuchs, but eunuchs weren't gay. They were just castrated men, castrated heterosexual men. So they weren't like they were gay men, from what I know, from what I understand. But he tried to relate himself to that and said, oh, it's okay for him to be gay, just as long as he don't do any gay stuff. And so if you hear his voice, it sounds very feminine, and he can't change it. I mean, he must have learned this either through abuse at a very, very young age, but he talks very feminine. And I feel sorry for that brother because he really did dig out some information I think everybody should know. And it's just sad that he left the walk or he just didn't want to do the videos anymore. And I mean, he has so much knowledge. It's sad to see that page just not post anything anymore. And he talks about a goddess, which is AGADES, which is renamed the Akkadian Empire, which was really the Assyrian Empire, and not the Assyrian Empire in the Middle East. If you look up Sinar, Sinar was changed to Shinar and Shinar to Sumer. So it was the Babylonian nation, Shinar. Demisek, if you go through Strong's, Demisek's real name was translated to Damascus. And there is a Demisek in northern Africa, which is the Assyrian Empire, which is why they placed it all locations closely together in the Middle East. They want you to believe that the Arabs or a breed of people who happened there before the Israelites, and it was not true. We were the first people upon this earth, the very first. So any mixing that was going on happened after these nations were already in place. The land of Canaan. If you look at some of these old maps in the David Ramsey's map collection, they type it out as Kanaland at the very tip of South Africa, Kanaland. If you go to Southern African Place Names Dictionary, it's free also. And if you look up Kanaland or Canaland, it would tell you it is the land of Canaan and is named after the Kana root, which is a plant found in our South Africa. And when you look up these locations in the book that I told you about, which is online, they'll tell you that there were missionaries in this region, or the reason why they called it this is from the Bible, and it's a missionary. And what you see, it came about in the 1800s. Most of these missionaries, these chapels, these churches were erected in the 17th and 18th century. That's when they made that mad dash for Africa. Now, mind you, they knew exactly where they were going. They know exactly where the real people are, which is why they went down there as soon as we were in captivity. They went down into that land and started saying, okay, now we know where all the biblical locations are. We have to know where they are in order to sell people a lie, so no one stumbles upon the truth. We have to be very meticulous in disguising where these real locations are. So they put missionaries in churches and have these people go to the correct locations, equal distance apart, that's even mentioned in scripture to put these locations in. But various missionaries from either Dutch or German happened to find them, and them finding it over centuries. But they're putting them in the right, in the correct distance from each other, as is talked about in scripture. That's almost impossible to do. And these people not being really in relation to each other or their missionary or their churches, but by religion, happen to place things in the correct part. Like there's a Bethlehem in South Africa. And why, if you look at the Southern African Place Names Dictionary, it'll tell you they call this because it means the house of bread, which is what Bethlehem means, because there was a lot of barley or wheat in this area. This is why they call it Bethlehem, to name it after the Bible. It makes no sense to me. And a land full of Africans, and then Germans and Dutch take it over, and they don't even call it after their German heritage or their J Dutch heritage. They call it after a Hebraic heritage. Makes no sense. Absolutely none. Especially if you control or own a place, you would call it after your descendants' names or their gods. You would have Odin in South Africa. I don't even know any other Norse, or Thor, or yeah, Thor or Frida. You would have that in South Africa, not biblical locations in South Africa named by Dutch and German people. Again, man does not have the power that you think he has. It's almost the same where you see in the news that they now want to change the Mercator map. This map has been in place for like 500 and some years. Why all of a sudden they want to change it now? And they told you they voted. They voted on changing this map to show the real size of Africa. Mind you, all the other continents also had to change as well. But why did they focus only on showing us how big in size Africa truly was? Why were they like, oh, we want to show you the real size of America. We want to show you the real size of India. We want to show you the real size of China. It was Africa. That was the focal point of the UN meeting, where 164 countries voted, yes, we should change to show the real size of Africa. One nation voted no. The dumbass nation, United States, voted no. And you know why they voted no? Because Israel was absent. So you know, through proxy, Israel voted for United States. They voted no. They can't look, they can't be seen as voting against Africa or blacks, because they need us, at some point, they need us to validate their existence. That's why they keep trying to build alliances with us, either through politics, either through entertainment. They have to continue to use us because they cannot have, they don't have a leg to stand on when it comes to civil rights. If you want to destroy a nation, you have to introduce perversion, and you have to funnel it over black people spilling their blood in this land. You have to funnel it under a civil rights system in order to get away with everything. There's always loopholes that they will follow or follow and find. So that's why they're bound to us. They don't want to be, but they're bound to us. They're in hopes that we don't wake up and know who we are and know who they are. If that happens, they don't have a leg. Like I said, they don't have a leg to stand on. That means the music that they control and own, we won't be a part of it. The sports that they control and own, we'll simply stop participating. Hollywood will basically stop supporting and promoting their ideology of our relationships and trotting us down or making us look like animals. And the images that you see on TV, all of it goes away. If that goes away, their money goes away. Their control goes away. So of course they're not going to ever be present and vote yes or no. They're going to be absent. Because if they vote yes, it would seem like, oh, why all of a sudden you're trying to validate African Jews now? That becomes a discussion. Like, how are you going to validate Africa as a size? And yet, look what you do and look what you say against African Jews trying to assimilate into Israel. So of course they're going to be absent. And of course they're going to point the fingers at America. Like, look how racist your country is. Look where all the African-Americans that are there, and they don't want to validate the size of Africa. Like, oh, and then you'd be like, oh, it's white supremacy. White supremacy that. Nah, it's deeper than that. It's deeper than that. This is why Paul said, I will send you to a foolish nation. A foolish nation will anger you. A foolish nation. A people who are not a people. That is a curse in Deuteronomy, and is talked about in Romans. So this is the Most High. Tell them it's time for us to stop being tails and start being heads. Stop living below these people and start living above them. That's a sign. Why would he care about the size of Africa now? I'm telling you, so you understand. The truth is coming out. The Most High is doing it his way. But we have already been hip to it. The bigger you see it now, you understand that they took 40 years to walk through that wilderness. If you look at it today, you see how big it is? 40 years to walk through that wilderness. And not from Goshen, which is at the tip of Africa, going to Israel, which if you look at it up now, not on Apple Maps, but if you look it up in other, like say Google Earth, it takes a day and 24 hours, almost 2 days. I think it's day and 12 hours, really. It takes a day to walk from Goshen to Israel. How would 40-year journey, which is a day's walk, take that long? Mind you, they literally had to walk past the Holy Land, and they walked all the way around it for 40 years. Fam, they would have to make circles on top of circles on top of circles on top of circles. It ain't like they went all the way up to Antioch and Greece and Rome and came back around. It didn't even say they went to Babylon, which people think it's Saudi Arabia or Iraq. There's no way in the world they did 40 years over there in that wilderness. and then see giants. Come on, it's common sense, really. If you're walking out of Goshen and the land is already flat and it's already by the water, you would somewhat see giants if you're walking by that land for 40 years. You would see them. And how would you think giants, being so tall, would ever be able to be hid in a land that does not have mountains, a land that does not have deep caves or deep valleys or forestation where you can hide in? The area is pretty much desert. You've seen what modern day Israel looks like. It ain't like they're replete with rainforest and places where giants could reap the benefits of the land. That's common sense almost. Because that's what, if they walk and see giants, be like, damn, you walking literally right by them. And I'm pretty sure if the giants saw them, like, oh, food. I'm about to see all these people, food. Yet you don't see any writings or being unveiled of any giants being mentioned to be closely, like they could have walked across into Greece or Rome if they wanted to, yet they did not. The story makes no sense. You would find a lot of giants in that region, at least their bones. They told you they found the Dead Sea Scrolls, but they have not told you they found not one bone of a giant, not one bone of a Nephilim or a Rephaim or any hybrid of a giant species. You have not found one in Israel. A land that's no bigger than New Jersey, going to tell you that they can hold a whole descendant, a whole nation of giants. Mind you, on top of all the other African nations that were around there at that time. That land is crowded. Crowded, crowded, crowded. If I was a giant, I am hiding in the place of my birth, especially when I know where my birthplace is. So once Adam and Eve came out of the Garden of Eden and the Most High took away that garden, they were in Africa. So the angels, when they came down, they saw the children of men. They saw that the women were fair and beautiful. And they came down and made wives with them. So if you know the story as a giant, being obviously a little bit smart, even though you're big and deformed, you at least got the intelligence of an angel. But the appetite of a man, obviously you know exactly where you were born. You know exactly what land is going to sustain you. There is more giant bones and giant fossils found in America than there is in Israel. And this also goes back to the whole Pangaea theory, that all the continents were somewhat merged together before there was like a great earthquake and the Most High broke them apart, which could have been the days of the flood. Obviously, when the water poured from on top and also came up underneath would cause a shift, maybe, I don't know. But if you look at the map, you could see how Brazil connected to Africa, how Florida and America somewhat merged itself on the top of North Africa, which is why Florida weather seems very tropical-ish to the Northern African region. When people say, oh, Noah's Ark, the wood is only found in Florida. Yeah, duh. It ain't because the Bible took place in America. It's because at one point, these lands were all connected. So when the giants fled, tried to flee, to go, somewhere else to escape the flood, they mostly ended up their bodies dying in Florida. I mean, not Florida, but in America. And the Smithsonian came in and scooped those bones up and hid them. If you look at some of these old articles about giants being found, even some of them even being alive, of these giants being found in America, they talk about how the Smithsonian came in and took these bones and then they're no longer seen again. But you never heard any giant being found in Israel, which you absolutely would need. If we're talking about Og of Bashan, if you're talking about Goliath, and you talk about Goliath's brother. But they told you they found some scrolls in a cave for all this time. Just sitting there, in the hole in a cave, just sitting there. Didn't find not one shred of a giant's bone in that region. And also, if you look up, you can look at this up now, it's modern, Eden Municipality or the Garden Route District. If you look up Eden Municipality and the Garden Route District, it's in South Africa. They used to be called one or the other, the Eden Municipality or the Garden Route District, Garden of Eden. They pretty much tell you right in front of your face that this is where it is. And if you look at online, Kanaland, that's still there. The Kanaland municipality, if you look at the Hebrew paleo left symbol that they use for the K, that is also a telltale sign in front of your face that that land is the land of Canaan. That before the Jews came down and brought up all these laps, I mean laps, maps, the cartographers was placing these Hebraic names in southern Africa before they ended up in Israel in the Middle East. I've already seen two Ramas in Israel. Two cities called Ramas, which is a biblical city. I found also this name Rama in South Africa, which is closely related to all the other locations that I found in South Africa as well. Also in scripture, Yirmiyahu 16:13 through 15, it says, "No more will it be said that Yahuwah that lead the children of Yisrael out of Mitzrayim, that no more it will be said that he leads the children of Yisrael out of the lands of the north." Out of the lands of the north. If you believe that Middle East Israel is our land, then we are not north of that land. We are west of that land. And I'm pretty sure the Most High Yahuwah knows his difference between north, south, east, and west. So the reason why he said land of the north is because North America and the places that he scattered us are north, are north of southern Namibia, north of Yerushalayim. If the Most High wanted us to be in the Middle East, he would have said all the lands of the west. He would not have said north. That scripture only relates to the lies of what the European Jews did. Since it says land of the north and they came from Germany and they're coming down to Israel, that will make sense. We're like, oh, this is the real people. But knowing where the real location is, we're like, oh, not only does it change the direction, but it also changes the people. Just in that verse, land of the north, and knowing where the real biblical lands are. Deuteronomy 8:7 even talks about brooks of waters, fountains, depths that spring out of valleys and hills. But if you look at the topography of Israel, there is no depths of valleys. There are no fountains. They told y'all that a body of water surrounded by land is a lake, yet they call it a sea. And the Most High would not put his people or any of his nation by anything that's called dead. Not the Dead Sea, not the Black Sea, not the Caspian Sea, not the Sea of Galilee, which are bodies of water surrounded by land that are actual lakes. But somehow we allowed them to get away with that lie. In old maps, I've seen Galilee, like they wanted to say Galilee, but they called it Galilee, which it was connected to Lake Zaire. Those rivers at that time, when the cartographers was making the maps, that river poured all the way across South Africa into the sea. There's other places that talk about Southern Africa. There was a documentary I was watching. I can't think of it by name right now, but he was talking about there's this current, this invisible current that causes the temperature of the air in its relation to the water to change in a way where it acts like a force field on the skeleton region of South Africa, on the west side, where basically where Yerushalayim is, which that rides along the Orange River. They call it the skeleton coast because ships are just broken up there. There's no one can get to that side of that land. No one, I mean, I'm pretty sure they've tried, but there's like a bunch of ships just littered on that seaside. And he said it's because of this invisible force field of the current of the Most High changing the temperature of the air and the temperature of the water in such a way that it acts as a barrier. So it's almost like if it wasn't there would be a landing zone for all ships to come into Yerushalayim and set up shop in that region where the Kalahari Desert is. And the Most High said it will not be inhabited, not by man and not by beast. If you look at pictures of the Kalahari Desert, you've seen it, it's red land. You see a tree, it's always used that tree that sits in the middle of that desert. That's the picture that you see the most. But it shows you that water used to be there. That land was fertile. That is a sign. If you read Yirmiyahu 9:11, it talks about how Jerusalem should be desolate and without inhabitants until the time of the Gentile is over. There's no way in the world that you would believe that the Most High would kick us off our land, yet bring a nation that became a safe haven for pedophiles and sex offenders to remain on that land. And not only just that, within that land, but also have Jews, Christians, and Muslims in it. Come on. We've been kicked off that land for a lot less. And you would think that the Most High would allow them to come and inhabit that land? No. Just like I told you when we went into captivity in Babylon for 70 plus years, that the land had to rest. That means all the demons that were in that land need to be removed. Demons are not going to sit around in an empty land. They like to oppress. They like to possess. So once the people leave and the land is desolate, that means the demons are going to leave it desolate. And they are going to go into various other nations and they're going to cleanse that. That's how that land gets cleansed. That's why he keeps removing them off the land. Because of demonic infestation. And you're going to try to tell me he's going to allow his land to continue to be demonically infested by three religions. And one of those religions working for Satan. Moloch, the star of Rimphon. I mean, he destroyed us for even worshiping the luminaries. But he's allowing them just to sit there for that land and to destroy it and not even give that land a rest from all the nonsense that they have done on it? Nah. The real land is in southern Namibia, and you can't get to that side of southern Namibia on the west coast side because the Most High has placed a barrier there so nobody can get there. Look at the UNESCO sites of that land. Most of that land in central and southern Africa are reserves, are wildlife reserves. There wasn't always wildlife reserves in the days of Yasharel. There was no UNESCO sites in the days of Yasharel. He's basically leaving his land cleansed just for the animals, for us. We will build the desolate places. All that land that's down there is not even inhabited. It's just animals living there and grazing. Now we know how significantly large that land is. Fam. It's literally room enough for the remnant and also those who cleave to us to have a mansion and a lot of acreage to grow wine, to have livestock, to do offerings. And that is my next question that she asked. And my next question, or my last question that she asked. Lastly, could you direct me to the scriptures concerning burnt offerings and explaining why you believe we should continue to doing them? From what I understand, we aren't offering sacrifices for atonement because Yahushua came, but there are also offerings of thanksgiving that are described as a pleasing or sweet aroma to Yahuwah. You are absolutely right. We do not sacrifice or offer for sin. Mind you, could do a peace offering, a love offering, a thank offering, just an ordinance offering. But we don't need to do an offering for sin. And we wouldn't even use the same materials for the offerings of sin. Usually the offering for sin usually was a goat, which has its own symbology, symbolic meaning behind it. And that's another episode. But all of the feast days, all of them have an ordinance that we offer by fire. Jubilee 1623, the origin story of Sukkot. The reason why we have a Sukkot is because Abraham was celebrating the fact that Yitzhak came into existence. Yitzhak was born. So Abraham was happy. So the reason why we have Sukkot is because of Abraham. And when it says written on heavenly tablets, that means everybody's offering. That means I'm pretty sure the angels were offering or whatever they participated in, either a symbolic offering. Because I mean, what they're going to offer, everything they have comes from Yahuwah. But it's written on the heavenly tablets what these ordinances are. I mean, you have to kind of read it yourself. I mean, there's a lot of verses that says sweet smelling savor to Yahuwah. I mean, you could do drink offerings, not just burnt offerings, drink offerings in Sirach 50:15. All of this as far as offerings, is to have you understand Ephesians 5:2, where it says Yahusha was an offering or a type of offering. Now, if Yahusha offered himself up as a lamb without blemish, without spot, pure, that means that anything that comes from our hand, as it's come from Yahuwah's hand, must be perfect, without blemish, without spot. And the hands that gives it must be righteous, without blemish and without spot. This is why the ordinance of a day by day continually ascending smoke offering, because he wanted the children of Yisrael to understand that you cannot offer me anything lame and you cannot have your hands defiled. I want this nation to remain pure. So the day by day was, especially when they were just coming out of Egypt, you had to purge that nonsense of you can serve him whenever you want. You can serve him only when times are good. It was to remove all of that. It was to teach you consistency. That's what it's about, consistency. So many people today struggle with being consistent. And that's because of a lack of schedule, a lack of time management in their everyday lives from the time they entered this world. Some of us were blessed to always be in a schedule. When you woke up, you went to school, you went to practice. And then when you're on your own, you still, when you, if any of you were blessed to be a student athlete, you learned schedule. You learned to go into school, you learned to complete assignments, and then you went to practice. Like, your body and your mind are alternating its workings. So when you leave school, the scheduling, the programming that you received during your younger years stick with you. So if you do something, you know, whatever you choose to do, either it be mental or physical, you build up a consistency, and you can't, it makes you feel weird if you stop doing the one thing that you're used to doing. Like, for instance, if I don't go to the gym, I feel out of it. Like, I have to go, even if I miss a couple of days, I have to go to stay consistent. I mean, I don't have to do it. But again, it's the programming that you received when you were younger, which it helps you. Are there days that I don't want to read scripture? Yeah, there are days I don't want to read scripture. Are there days I don't want to do these episodes? Yeah, there are days that I don't want to do these episodes. But staying consistent and repeating things when you don't want to do them, that is how you have a breakthrough spiritually. Because it will be a time where you're tested. And the Most High wants to see how strong your faith is by you continually to serve him when things aren't going your way. So when the trials become harder and harder and harder, you will build up a consistency saying, I got this. I don't need to look at myself as a victim anymore. I got this. I survived the first thing. And I'm pretty sure I can survive the next and the next and the next. And if you build up a consistency of facing hard challenges alone, then we truly understand the sacrifice and offering of Yahusha. I mean, he knew it off jump. He knew what his purpose is off rip. We have to build up our purpose, because most of us don't know what our purposes are when it comes to scripture, or our roles when it comes to the scriptures. So we're literally like the blind, but we're building up a consistency being blinded to what our true purpose is. We're being prepared, but we don't know what we're being prepared for. A lot of you are going to find that you're healers. A lot of you are going to find that you're preachers and pastors. A lot of you are going to find out that you're the person that lay hands on somebody or a listener. You don't know what your purpose is yet, most of you. But I'm telling you, the way he's preparing you is through consistency. Now, there's different offerings like heave offering, wave offering, drink offering, burnt offering, smoke offering. And that has nothing to do with sin. The sin offering was always separate. He even mentions it in scriptures. This will be a sin offering to you. This will be a sin offering unto you. He makes it very clear. And if you go to Malachi, he talks about we returning to him
and tithes and offerings. And he says, prove me on this. He said, return unto me with tithes and offerings and see if I don't open up the doors of heaven and pour out a blessing so large you won't have room to store it. I love that verse. Because that verse, he has not allowed it to return void unto him. When he says that whatever I say, it will accomplish the thing I told it to do. It will never return back to me in void. So I like to offer to the Most High. So if you look up in the Sefer or get the Sefer, sweet smelling savor, or if you just read the scriptures for yourself, you know, if you look up offering, all types of verses that says sweet smelling savor will come up underneath offering. That's how I found it, by typing it into the Sefer search app. That's how I made an episode, multiple episodes on the sweet-smelling savor of Yahuwah and what is accepted. Jubilees 21 talks about the wood that is accepted upon the altar. And Abraham, this is what Abraham instructed Yitzhak, Isaac, his son. So if you're gonna give, this is the wood that you do it on. Exodus talks about that the altar must be made with natural stones, that it cannot be hewn stones. It can't be a stone that has a tool lifted upon it. It can't look like you constructed this yourself, because you're not worshiping the altar that Yahuwah made just from the materials of the ground. You're worshiping it from what you made. So if you look at all the man-made altars that they got in these churches, don't mean nothing. Absolutely nothing to the Most High. And remember, before there was a Torah, the very first children on earth offered. And this was the deciding factor of who was going to be righteous and accepted and who was going to be denied and lead a life of wickedness. The very first children, Cain and Abel. Nothing that they've done when they came into the earth, nothing was pointed out except when they chose to offer to the Most High Yahuwah. Now, how would they learn that the Most High accepted offerings from off the ground? They must have learned it from their parents. Adam must have showed it to them. And he must have showed it to them when he fell, when they knew they were wrong. So when they were wrong, they felt like, oh, we have to offer to the Most High Yahuwah. We have to show him that we are still faithful to him, that we don't want to be destroyed. So when the children came in, obviously, they wanted to point out the separation of what Abel did to what Cain did. Abel's was accepted because he chose the livestock without blemish. He showed the purity of his hands and the purity of his offering. Cain gave from the inferior of the ground. See, in Genesis, it just says, like, oh, Cain's was rejected, but you don't know why Cain's offering was rejected. You just knew it was. But he gave the inferior fruit of the ground to the Most High Yahuwah, and that's why it was rejected. You can't give the Most High anything inferior. So if you look at the offering, not only is it something to do and feel like it's a burden, you look at yourself as an offering. If you needed to offer yourself like Isaac, like Yitzhak, offer it upon the altar of Yahuwah, would you be accepted? Right now, if the Most High said, get on this altar and I'm going to make you an ascending smoke offering, would you be accepted? Would you be an offering without blemish, without spot, without sickness? Obviously without sin, because I talked about in the last episode how sin, too much sinning leads to sickness. So would you? That's the question you should really ask yourself. If the fire came down right now, and Yah turned your entire household into a ascending smoke offering, would you be accepted? Have you done enough in this walk to believe that you have been accepted? This is why Paul said, work out your own salvation, your own Yeshua, with fear and trembling. Because we truly do not know how much is enough. We truly do not understand the price that we were bought for. Like I said, we were blind to our true purpose until we actually know what it is. But it builds consistency to start understanding that we do have a purpose on this earth. Next time, guys.